I'll maybe play the rest of that video a little bit later. Good afternoon, Tech Ed. How are you? Having a good time here, yes? Okay, raise your hand if this is your first Tech Ed, please. Raise your hand. Give these folks a big round of applause, huh? Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome along to my session. My name is Andy Malone. We're going to take a journey to the dark side of social networking. Absolutely nothing to do with Tech Ed whatsoever. But I think from a security perspective, it is quite important, actually, because the foundation of the way we do business on the internet, the way we work on the internet, the way we socialize on the internet has changed considerably over the last few years, I'm sure you'll agree. So who am I? You can follow me at Andy Malone. Please do. I've got videos, I've got loads of extra stuff here from all of my sessions. I'm going to share a SkyDrive probably tonight when I get back to my hotel, and I'm going to post the link on Twitter. So if you sign up for me, then you'll get that link a little bit later on. So I'm an MVP like Paula and Marcus in enterprise security for 8 years now, actually. I'm also an MCT, Microsoft Certified Trainer. I'm based in Scotland, so like many of you here, English is my second language. And we are going to talk about social networking security. Now, I must warn you, for the nature of this particular content, there is bad language in here, so if you're easily offended, and some of you look like you might be, then I must warn you in advance, okay? So not for the kids, okay, this particular session. Why did I decide to show this particular session here? Well, Paula Yuneskovich, and I can say her last name, see? Paula Yuneskovich, we worked together on a big event called the Cybercrime Security Forum, which we take worldwide, and this was one of the event, this was one of the sessions, and she said, hey, you know, let's maybe think about this one. So we're gonna, this is the basically the content we're gonna talk about for the next 75 minutes. Then after that, I have another session, which is all about the insider threat, the inside man threat. So in this world of economic espionage, we'll talk about what's the psychology that drives somebody to do the bad stuff, all right? So that's pretty much where we're going here for the next 75 minutes, and then we've got another 75 minutes there. So, raise of hands. Who is on a social network? Let's have a raise of hands. Who's on a social network? Of course you are. Of course you are. Everybody's on a social network. You don't even think about it anymore. We're on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm on all of the above. Okay. So we call this the rise of the socio-technical society. So 20 years ago when you were, some of you were kids, and when I was a kid, we didn't have any of this. In fact, I didn't even have a computer when I was a kid. It was the calculator. So we have come a long way in a number of years. We used to sit and play with our friends or go out. You don't see kids on the street anymore. You don't see kids playing anymore outside. Why? Because we're all afraid. We're all afraid of, I don't know what we're afraid of, but apparently we're all afraid of something. So on the right-hand side there, this is the way it used to be. We used to make friends here. We used to go to the pub on a Friday night, on a Saturday night. We had a lot of time. We maybe had the folks over for a barbecue. Now we don't. Now we just sit in front of a TV or a monitor, and we Twitter and we Facebook. Okay? So there's a fundamental change in the way that society, not just your society, but this is affecting worldwide. And the question I'm going to pose today is that a healthy one? So what are the upsides and what are the downsides of social networking? So when we think about evolution versus revolution, there's always been socialization. So if you look at the psychology of socialization, people have always come together. So from the beginnings of history. So basically what we're seeing is this massive shift on how we communicate. People won't talk to each other anymore. They won't pick up the phone. They will now just text a message. Texting is the big thing. So we've lost the ability to actually communicate. And the problem with that, of course, is that when you're texting or emailing somebody, it's very, very black and white. You can't get your emotions into that communication, and thus it does cause problems. So what is a social network? Well, here we go. This is Facebook's definition of a social network. It's made up of a set of actors, such as individuals or organizations, and the ties between these actors, such as relationships, connections, or interactions. Hang on a minute. That's the way we did it 20 years ago. That's the way we've always done it. But the problem is that you guys think that that is the same as what we had 20 or 30 years ago. Absolutely, it's not. Okay, what we have today is a situation where we post something, we say something, and it can literally affect millions of people. It can affect thousands of people. And reactions can be very, very quick forthcoming. If you say something in Twitter, boom, it's worldwide. So you have to be very, very careful what you say. That's the first thing. So what is the psychology behind a social network? Some people use social networking. I'm not saying putting any labels on anybody here, by the way. Some people maybe spend quite a lot of time social networking, and you maybe spend time on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. And this is great. This is fine. But the problem is we're finding that there are now different types of personality traits. So one hypothesis there is that popular people will have connections because they want to be popular. And on the other hand, it helps unpopular people become popular because you don't have to portray your true self. You can be something that you're not. And as interesting as this is, it can also be a little bit sinister as well. So when we look at the number of social networks, it's literally exploded over the last few years. I mean, there are two types of social network. There's the social network that we all know and love. There are social networks for absolutely everything. And honestly, if you spent your time posting to all of these social networks, I'm sure you would never get any work done. But the question is the social networking fad, the trend, is it coming to an end? This is really interesting, actually. I saw this the other day. What happens in one internet minute? And this is incredible. The amount of data, the amount of traffic, emails, conversations going over the wire. And this is just 1 minute of each day. So you can imagine how much traffic is actually on the internet. Now, there are legitimate social networks, and there are also dark social networks. So I'm sure some of you have heard of the Tor network. The Tor network is the other side, the flip side of the internet. Some people argue that it's actually three times the size of the internet. And on there are social networks on there for pedophiles, for sex slaves, for money laundering, for drug dealing, for guns, weapons, and what have you. So there's a whole other dark side to this. So when we talk about social network, I mean, I'm not saying it's all bad. A social network can be a fantastic thing for businesses. It can be a way of getting your product out there, a way of getting known out there, getting your name known. It can enforce a company image, if you will. So every company, it's a good idea to have at least an image, a social image, which is good, because it can drive traffic and it can also increase your product sales. But on the other side, it can obviously have a downside. This is Robert Maxwell in the UK. His organization was caught phone hacking a few years ago. It was actually proven in court that a number of his reporters were getting information through phone hacking. So a number of famous people and infamous people have actually sued them, and it caused this man to actually close one of his newspapers. Here in the US, of course, he owns many big publications and also film companies like 20th Century Fox. So it can be a good thing, and it can also be an Achilles heel as well. So the business moral dilemma is I do a lot of work with the military, and a lot of people say, hey, you know, we don't want people social networking on our network. We want to stop them. Well, to be honest, I take it, this is something that you can't stop. I don't think you can stop people from social networking. Yes, you can maybe restrict it in the workplace and on the battlefield, but the problem is these guys are going to phone home, they're going to phone home to their wives, they're going to phone home to their kids, and what are their kids going to do? They're going to go onto a social network. My dad's in downtown Kabul. Okay? So, again, there is this kind of dilemma on how you use a social network. So, should employees be empowered to participate? Yes. And I'm sure many of you are. Many of you are probably encouraged to participate in your team's successes, and also maybe its failures as well. Now, there's the question, are we coming to social exhaustion with Facebook? Now, actually, what we found is obviously Facebook have hit the 1 billion mark in the last year, but we're actually now looking at figures starting to fall away. Certainly in the US and in the UK, figures for Facebook are starting to fall away. Now, whether this is a reason for their policies of advertising, aggressive advertising, I'm not sure. Maybe it's just we're looking for the next big thing, which might be Twitter, it might be something else. But it's definitely showing that the market is changing. So, now we move to the subject of internet safety. Raise your hand if you've got kids. Raise your hand if you've got kids. Okay, raise your hand if you're are you a little bit concerned about your kids being on the internet? Yes? Okay, so there's a few hands out there. I can see that. Okay, and so you should be as well. This is a great advert for internet safety, by the way.
Schmidt, Peters, Jansen, Hermans. Is your son home?
Yes, he's up in his room. Come in.
Hi, is Kevin here?
Yeah, upstairs.
Well then, we'll go up.
Good location.
Where's Kev?
There.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Is this little Anna? In real life, you'd protect your children. So why not protect them on the internet? Get involved. Get WebWise. Visit WebWise on Facebook.
Okay, I don't know about you, but when I saw that video, that was creepy, man. That kind of made me creepy. So, when we talk about the internet, there are threats to everybody, not just computer threats. So, there are threats to individuals in terms of sexual predators, cyberbullies. And cyberbullies, by the way, they're not just affected by kids. We also talk about trolls here as well, of course. File sharing abuse, again, I'll let you know my opinion on that. An invasion of privacy, the availability of disturbing content on the internet. So the fact that kids can go in, and especially with internet browsing phones now, they can just browse the internet, and before you know it, they're looking at a porn site. In fact, there was a case in the UK recently that a number of children have actually had to start counselling because of this problem. And the problem is that you might laugh at that and you might think, hey, that's really funny, but then the kid starts growing up thinking that this is normal, which it's clearly not. Then, of course, we talk about threats to personal safety, so spam, online fraud, credit card fraud. I'm sure we're all familiar with that. And of course, threats to computers as well. And it's not just threats to computers anymore, it's threats to devices. So we're talking about phone threats, malware, all kinds of nasty stuff. And again, there's nothing more, these guys are not targeting you personally, they're only interested in your money, of course. So the threats are quite large. And of course, in terms of technology, social networks have actually brought forward a whole bunch of creepy technologies. So in the past, stalking would clearly be illegal, where in real life you might look at somebody through a telescope, but now you can look at them from miles away and they don't even know that you're there. So that cyber stalking is very, very, in fact, frighteningly easy to do. This was a particular application. Some of you may know of this. Somebody in the audience over there said, oh yeah, I know that one. obviously, girls around me. Again, this is a little creepy application. This has actually been withdrawn now. Another one is this one. Where you can just browse and this is called Creepy. And basically, Creepy uses photos. So, you know, you take a picture with your Windows phone, you take a picture of somebody with your phone, and of course, in that picture now, it's not just the date and time of the picture, but it's the location of the picture, the geo-coordinates. It tells them how far you were from the target, with the position. There's a heck of a lot of information in that. So Creepy is quite an interesting little product. And we can't go anywhere now, can we? We're on a plane. Look at this. We're on a plane. I was on a plane the other day, and somebody said, hey, you maybe got friends that you know on Facebook on the plane. LinkedIn, it tells me who's on the plane. Now, again, this is a stalker's paradise here. Again, other technologies like Recognizer as well. Again, we've all seen products like this, but I can just see a girl in a coffee shop, point the camera at her, and it tells me, oh, she's on Twitter, she's on Facebook, bam, I've got her. I can do a little bit of searching and find more information on that person. And that could be quite dangerous, you might think. So geotagging, more and more cameras, and we're not just talking about SLRs. Of course, the fact that we now move into this kind of digital age. In the past, if a law enforcement person, said, does anybody have pictures from this crime? They would need to print out the pictures, with the chemicals, and there's no kind of electronic residue there. Whereas now, the cameras give us much more information. And this was one of the reasons why the FBI were recently able to track the Boston bombers, of course. So the cameras are very, very valuable in this scenario in terms of mapping and GPS. So if I go into a particular file here, I'm just going to go and open up something. Let's see what we've got here. I'm going to flip over to another web browser here, if you'll forgive me. And this is Jeffrey's EXIF viewer, and I'm going to go and browse for a picture. What shall we view? There's Paula. There's Paula Yaneskevich at the MVP Summit. And I'm going to say, let's have a look at this particular image. So just by looking at a simple photo that's maybe you've got on your Facebook page, that your kids have got on your Facebook page. So in the example here that we're looking at, this is obviously a football stadium in Seattle. But the cool thing is here, it gives you an awful lot of information about this picture. It gives you the longitude, the latitude, where the picture was. It gives you the map, the location of that particular picture. And you think, hey, that's a really nice feature. And for law enforcement, this is a perfect tool. For law enforcement who are trying to, solve a crime, who was actually in that location. But also, as you can appreciate, if you've got kids, and kids put pictures of themselves outside your house, with your geotagging, I can go in here. And then once I know where you live, of course, then I can have a look at the social security information. I can look at the voter's roll in Europe. I can then find out who lives at the house, the name of the person, and you can do some serious damage there. I'm sure your imaginations, you can work that one out for yourself. So geotagging potentially is a very, very useful thing, but just to show you, it could also be seriously abused as well. Okay, so the next thing then is, so the internet. So the internet is all fluffy and cuddly and nice, but often we're not quite sure what lies underneath it. So there are a lot of nasty things here. So in terms of the social network, again, it could also be your liability. If you put too much information on there, and I'm sure we've all heard this, it's really funny to me when I come to the States, because I have everybody talking about security, security, security. Oh yeah, we're really secure. We've got firewalls, we've got antivirus, we've got all of this. We've got a non-disclosure policy in our company. And then what do? You go on Facebook and social networks and you just basically spill your beans, spill your life. So very interesting, very interesting. And you've got to be very, very careful what you say on a social network, because it really could be libelous. I mean, there are a number of cases recently in both the US and the UK where somebody has tweeted something or said something on the internet. Again, that's been taken up the wrong way. People don't like that, and they end up suing you. So when we talk about the technical threats within inside a social network, it's really just like any other type of device. So we're talking about a huge rise in malicious malware. Now, did anybody see Marcus's session yesterday? Yeah, okay, he did a great session yesterday on malware. And if you think that antivirus software is going to protect you, then think again. Antivirus and malware software only catch a very, very tiny amount of malware. So the rise in anti-social media as well, the rise of the middleman, the attack, the inside attack, and we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on as well. Cyberbullying as well is becoming a real problem here. So this is interesting. Malware auto-runs USB social engineering. Social engineering represents 65% of attacks. So typically, it's to do with email attachments, nasty stuff coming over the phone. People want free games, so what do? They jailbreak their phones. Other things that we've got, you know, there's a number of classic attacks there. RSA is a classic. So other things that we've got to think about, poor privacy laws. So it's amazing that you've got governments who are standing up now and they're saying, okay, we want to start putting in some restrictions on the internet. We want to start putting some laws in on the internet. And then people get very upset about that. You're taking away my freedom. Well, I'm going to show you some things on the internet later on, which will make the hair curl on the back of your neck, and you'll definitely want those rules in place. But at the moment, the internet, when it was designed to be free and open and great. My friends, that was 30 years ago. Those were more innocent times. We're in a very, very different world today. And again, I think at this point in time, we need to start looking at not so much, maybe it is regulation in order to protect people, okay? So here's a little video, again, this is a bit of a creepy one as well.
Meeting a teen girl online is actually pretty easy. You can go into any chat room and just start talking. Most of the girls are usually so insecure and desperate for
attention from older guys is totally flattering. They're so much more mature and understanding than the guys my
age. Age actually works to my advantage. They like to brag to their friends that they're dating an older guy, so I just play along and pretend I'm really
interested in the same things I am. You can talk forever and really get to know someone without worrying about looks or whatever. That's the best thing about
chatting. Seems unthreatening to them, so they lower their guard. After a while, I start talking about how we're soulmates and how lucky we are to have found each other.
Other people don't understand. I know what I'm doing. If you really care about each other, there's nothing wrong with me.
Meeting them is the goal. Once I get them out of their house, well, that's when things get really interesting.
Online predators know what they're doing. Do you?
A little bit creepy. OK, Okay? These guys, online predators, are serious. They are serious players. In 20 years ago, even today, we have pedophiles. Now, pedophiles, the problem is, if you heard of a pedophile that lives in your street, you know, you can protect your kids from somebody like that. But the problem is here, your kids are on the internet. You're on the internet. You have no idea who you're talking to. You know, you're talking to somebody called Allison from the UK. In actual fact, it's a guy and he's in Africa trying to scam you. So you've got to be very, very careful. And don't think that it doesn't affect men, by the way. Don't think that it's just a female thing here. There are a number, in fact, a large number of cases where men have been targeted. And there was one particular case where a guy turned up in South Africa to meet somebody. And basically the guy was stabbed and he was murdered and he had his wallet stolen because he assumed he was going to meet a girl. And it was, the whole thing was just a setup. So again, I've put some links in these videos as well, which hopefully find it interesting. So how do you spot problems? If you've got kids, if you've got family, how do you spot potential problems here? So in terms of bullying, well, in days gone by, and I can speak for this, I've got a daughter myself, and she was recently the case of bullying. And not physically attacked, but there was a YouTube video. A friend was putting YouTube videos on the internet, and she was slagging her off. And in a case, that is bullying. And my daughter got very, very upset about that. And so it can have a real impact in terms of not sleeping or sleeping changes. The kid's got headaches or stomach aches. Maybe they've lost their appetite. They don't want to go out to restaurants. They want to stay in all the time. They've got poor concentration, so it can affect the school lives. Maybe they're depressed. Maybe they have increased levels of anxiety. Maybe they don't want to go to school. So the problem is, in the days gone by, bullying was just associated with the classroom or the workplace. Whereas nowadays, it's global. It's literally everywhere. Cyberbullying has also become a huge problem as well. Huge growth, actually. And the little video, the snippet of the Ellen video at the beginning there, in the US alone, the average number of deaths, there's about 30 to 50 people commit suicide every year in the US alone. And these are kids from anything from 8 years of age to about 18, just because they've been cyberbullied on the internet. So again, it affects millions of users worldwide. So, and again, the worst thing that you can do is just sit there and think, hey, this is never going to happen to me. So this is the person, the nasty person, that takes bullying to the next level. We call him the troll. Yes, and there's a nice little song about him. I'm sure you can go on the internet and you can see him. This guy is the lowest of the low. And I'm not talking just guys. I know cases of women that have become trolls as well. So basically, he posts inflammatory messages on the internet. He pretends to be somebody. He pretends to be a friend on Facebook, of course. And, of course, you don't know who he is because you just add all your friends. Because to you, it's all about numbers. I've got more friends than you. So, again, you're adding these messages. And these people are putting in poisonous messages. There's a number of cases where people have died in accidents, or where people have taken their own lives in suicide cases, and these guys have gone onto their kind of Facebooks and done some nasty things. And again, the problem is finding and arresting these people. And the problem is, what do you arrest them for? Okay, the laws are somewhat slow in this area. So this is Tom Daley. He was the Olympic swimmer in the UK Olympics last year. You maybe remember he was the victim of a cyber troll. So often when kids get trolling messages, when they get nasty messages, you automatically assume that they're being bullied by somebody at school. But in many cases, they're not. These are adults. And they know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to elicit a reaction. They want the reaction. They thrive on that reaction. And again, there are different types of trolls. There's the simple playtime troll, the tactical troll that actually targets a specific person. Maybe it's a celebrity. Maybe it's the owner of a particular company. Then you start moving up to what we call a domination, and then finally, a psychopathic troll. And there are a number of videos. This particular clip here was a really bad case in the UK, and this guy was jailed for 3 years in the UK for trolling. So these guys have got a serious issue. Now, this is a young lady called Jessica Reinhardt. Now, Jessica goes by the name of Jessie Slaughter. It's a very famous case. I'm sure you're aware of this case. Now, this child is 11. Remember this, she's 11. And a few years ago, she went online. It's a very famous video on YouTube. And she was being bullied at school, and she was basically swearing and saying, "What I'm going to do to you." The language was quite choice, so this is the reason why I didn't play that one. But the result was, she said, "I'm going to, whoever's doing this, I'm going to put a Glock in your mouth and turn your brain into a slushy." Now, the internet community just completely turned upon itself on that. Groups like Anonymous, groups like some of these cyber trolling groups, they absolutely bombarded her family. For example, there was one case in for 5 days in a row. They would phone every single Chinese takeaway, pizza delivery, and they would have all these pizzas delivered and Chinese meals delivered. And you can imagine that. That sounds funny. But over and over and over again, it became a serious problem. And this was the result.
Okay, you guys, this is Jessie Slaughter, and
you know
I just want to say that you guys have ruined my life.
First, I'm going to tell you right now, this is from her father. You bunch of lying, no good punks, and I know who it's coming from because I backtraced it. Jeez. And I know who's emailing and who's doing it, and you've been reported to the cyber police and the state police. Ray, you better write one more thing or screw with my computer again. You'll be arrested. End of conversation from her father. And if you come near my daughter, guess what? Consequences will never be the same. You lying bunch of pricks.
See, my house has been like this ever since everybody's been posting stuff about me, okay?
Unfortunately, the law actually arrested her father for parental abuse because it was deemed that she had access to the internet and he wasn't monitoring her welfare. So he was actually arrested and given 2 years, I believe. But the crazy thing is that child doesn't learn because now she's 14 and she's back on the internet now. And you've got to say, you know, what drives these people? But that's a very, very sad case. She's 11. She was 11. So how do you fight back from that then? How do you get your kids to fight back? Key thing, you know, we've got to teach kids that are on Facebook, on social networks, even yourselves, trust no one. You know, if you're on Facebook, you know, you've got to say, is this a personal, closed Facebook that I'm just going to have people that I know and trust, or are you going to open it up to everyone? It's not about numbers. Be aware of that. Beware of list emails, you know, that praise or flatter you how wonderful, amazing you are, or try to evoke sympathy. These are all classic cases of how trolling begins. Okay. Again, don't forward these things. Also, again, if you are a list master, a mailing list for a community, a college, a school, be very, very careful who's got access to your information. So, good advice. Remember that these people are there to elicit a reaction from you. So the longer you communicate with them, the likely are that they're going to get information from you. Okay? So again, this is something you need to kind of nip in the bud right away. The more data, the more pictures, you know, the more information that you give them. And I mean, don't talk to me about privacy. Remember, a lot of these tools like Facebook, LinkedIn, these are free services. They make money from you, from advertising. They sell on your private data. A lot of the, you know, the photos that you sell, if you look on Facebook, anything, any photo that you put up on Facebook, they have 100% automatic rights to copy, distribute, publish, duplicate in any way that they please. So do you want your pictures going on the internet? The more friends you have, the easier it could be to be tracked and exploited. So again, the bigger your digital footprint, that's really what we're talking about here. The greater your digital footprint, the easier it is to be abused. Again, for more information on this, there's a link at the bottom of the page there. Okay, these slides are going to be available afterwards, by the way. This sounds funny, actually, but it's now been clinically proven that you can be addicted to social networking. You may even be addicted yourselves. You may know somebody who is addicted. Again, there are there's some good advice out there that you can get. I'm not quite sure how you would get unaddicted, but there you go. You just have to throw the laptop away or something. But again, just watch out for that. Okay, now, on the subject of being on the internet, on a social network, we need to talk about privacy, of course. So, you go to a organization like Microsoft, you put up your data on the internet. Microsoft make it very, very clear that they don't sell on your data. So right away, you can see that they don't sell on your data. Facebook, LinkedIn, a number of the other networks, they don't make those guarantees. In fact, if you look at the terms and conditions, which unfortunately change daily, they often tell you that your data will be made available. So, something to think about. So, the oops factor. I'm sure we've all done this. I've done this once as well. You know, where we've pressed a button. It's so easy to do, isn't it? You press a button and then, ooh, oops, I didn't mean to do that. But the problem is, the damage is done. The damage has already been done. And this can be the consequence.
Once you post your image online, you can't take it back. Anyone can see it. Family, friends, anyone. Remember, think before you post.
So what's the answer here? I think awareness has to be the answer. You know, you don't have to take this social networking you need to take it a little bit more seriously is what I'm trying to look at or trying to want to say. So look at the privacy here. This is Facebook privacy. Okay? And this is just like a few weeks ago, but I actually went in today and it changed again. So this is a company. I'm not saying they do wonderful stuff, but again, you need to be aware of your privacy. Okay, so social networking and the law. Okay, governments are starting to kind of tighten their belts in on this. So regulatory bodies have started telling social networking sites that they need to kind of be a little bit more proactive in this area. Also, law enforcement agencies will be able to get logs and download logs of your activity for forensic purposes as well. So that whole kind of forensic process, law enforcement process, is getting a little bit better as well. So again, one may argue, hang on a minute, are they taking my privacy away? This has nothing to do with privacy. This is regulations that really needed to be done. So what we've got, a number of ENISA here, the European Network Information Security Agency, and also the US are now putting into place regulations about how long Facebook, Twitter, these social networks can store your data, who they can sell your data onto, regulations about how they obtain that data from to law enforcement agencies as well. So the whole things are a little bit more clearer. So again, the UK, for example, has begun regulating Facebook and Twitter marketing now. So the types of marketing, the types of advertising, for example, you're not allowed to show explicit advertising for adult material, for example. So regulations and compliance, I would definitely go in and have a look at the data use policy. Very, very important. If you've got kids, make sure that you're their friend, okay, that you're actually knowing what your kids are doing. You don't have to snoop on them. It's not snooping, you're just kind of taking care of them, I guess. But make sure that you've gone in and had a look at the privacy settings on Facebook. And remember, these do change all the time. So, you know, you might say to yourself, hey, I did this, a couple of months ago. Again, these do change, so just be aware of that, folks, okay? Okay, this is an interesting little video on from Canada. So if you've got any Canadians, this is one for you. Woohoo!
Online, you really are who you say you are. The things you say write take on a life of their own. They form your identity. But the social networking sites where we express ourselves don't just focus on individuals. Instead, they make their money repackaging user data into trends and patterns. Personal data has become a hot commodity, and social sites are the public face of a much larger commercial operation. Knowing your hometown, your favorite TV show, or your politics is where the money is. And once information is added to the database, users have little control. Check out one such user agreement. By posting user content to any part of the site, you automatically grant the company an irrevocable, perpetual, non-exclusive, transferable, fully paid worldwide license to use, copy, publicly perform, display, reformat, translate, excerpt such user content for any purpose. So on social sites, it isn't really all about you, but your data. Businesses trade in the information that we enter, what we like and where we live, and what our interests are. Then advertisers can target us for products. Today's technology makes social sites a gold mine of information for marketing companies, or political interest groups, or potential employers. As data about you is shared, what will it mean? How about more catalogs on your doorstep, or more email adverts in your inbox? Maybe even more questions during your next job interview. The ways that personal information can be used, repackaged, and sold are virtually limitless. And as social sites become more popular, every time you add more data about yourself, it's as though you're answering a survey. And on the basis of that information, others will make decisions about you, about your employability, about your work ethic, about your other preferences, all without your knowledge or consent or ever actually having been asked. So next time you update your information online, ask yourself some tough questions first. For more information, please visit the website of the Office of the Privacy Commissioner of Canada, privcom.gc.ca.
Okay, so a little bit earlier I was talking about online privacy and tools and things like that. There are a number of very interesting websites that you can go. So this is beingverified.com. So again, this is, you can obviously make sure that it's a real kind of person and also find information about yourself. There's also a very interesting website. This is the Social Engineering Framework, a particularly good project. Again, a lot of organizations use this, obviously social networking, for marketing reasons, for genuine reasons. But it's also, as security professionals, very, very important to know about the dangers in social networking. So again, in here, they give some really good examples of social engineering tools, things like solicitation, pretexting tools, and things like that. So the computer-based, one of my favorite ones, of course, I always mention this one, is Multigo. Multigo is a deep web search engine, and you can find practically anything. So if you've got a digital footprint, it can be a very, very powerful tool. Of course, here in the US, you're very, very open about your data. So again, websites like, for example, PIPL. PIPL is another example of a deep web search engine. So for example, if I type in myself here, if I type in Andy Malone, I can say, let's just see if there's anybody here called Andy Malone. And what this does, it looks for any kind of digital footprint, whether you're on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, any of those. So, I'm not 73. Okay, obviously it looks for US information here. I wonder if I typed in MVP. Let's try that. So you can see what it's looking for, absolutely everything, blogs, social networking sites. Okay, so there you go. It's actually found me. So obviously you can go in and deep dive. It's showed pictures. There's some videos that I've shown here before, some log files. And actually, if you drill even further into that, you could actually find out where that person is and that location. So again, the more information that you put in a social networking site, the more you expose yourself to these problems. Other interesting sites, Twoogle, of course, that's an interesting one. You can also do background checks here. So if you want to check out somebody in your neighborhood, you can, without their consent, just go in and pay a few pounds. Other things that we've got in here, if I go into security, I put this in ID theft. You can do things like caller ID spoofing. You've got, stealth network spy. So if you really want to kind of search for somebody or obtain information on this person, this is a kind of stealth network tool that you could use. Obviously, once you meet a person, once you get hold of a person, getting information from them is very, very easy. And in the next session, I'm going to show you just how easy that is, actually. So, again, another thing about the US, anyway, is that you can also do... this is one in the UK that we've got. Obviously, hang on, let's just move that. So the thing about the the US, of course, is you're very, very open with your data. So, for example, you can do search on car registration plates. You can do search on criminal record searches. You could really, really check out your neighbors without their knowledge. Again, in other countries around the world, you can't do that. Only law enforcement can do that. But these are brilliant websites for doing deep searches. So if I've got something sinister in mind, finding you is very, very easy to do. So for me, the first thing that I would do is go onto a social networking site. I would find out as much as I possibly can from that person. Once I get a photo of that person, if I get a photo of a person outside their house, then that is gold, because you can geotag that picture, and then you can use these tools to really dive deep and find information. And how do you defend against that? How can you defend against this? Give me some suggestions. Shout it out. How do you defend against this stuff? The only way that you can do it is by restricting what you put on put online. I was actually thinking that we'll just go to the last slide, and then what I'm going to do is we're going to open it up for some Q&A, I think. So just a few final thoughts. So oversharing company activities. So I don't know if you saw Marcus's session yesterday, but we're going to talk about the inside man threat in the next session. Now, the point is, in many cases, you don't need to have an inside man, because if you've got bad security policies, you're doing the damage yourself, because you're mis-sharing information. So you have to be very, very careful with that. And how do you mis-share information, I hear you say? Well, I can just go to my favorite website, Bing, in this case. And I can, you know, the thing about this, I've done this many times, but if you just type in CNN, of course, you get just CNN. But if you want a little bit more information, it's very, very easy to find information on these sites. So I can just type in site, let's say, gov, let's say com, and we'll say file type. We'll say XLS, and let's put in membership list. So this does a filter, and you can see I now have just Excel spreadsheets showing me membership lists. Now, surely nobody would be stupid enough to put stuff on the internet, right? Surely not. Let's open this and... Surely not, right? Oh, yeah. Okay, so names, contacts. Let's see what else we got. Do we have another one? Master membership list. Ooh, that sounds interesting. Gold, my friends, gold. Okay, so names, phone numbers. Okay, so this is kind of stuff that should that be on the internet? So this is how easy it is to find somebody on the web. Okay, so be very, very careful of what you store. And that's all down to privacy, to your sharing policies in your organization. Avoid mixing personal and business. Absolutely. Okay? And remember, the next time that a beautiful woman comes sitting next to you in a bar, she may not just be wanting to be your friend. Okay? So, which that never happens to me, by the way. Okay. So, avoid engaging in tweeting or Facebook, LinkedIn, rage. So, that's really important. If somebody tries to evoke an angry response from you and you start feeding back on that, be very, very careful with that, because that can go horribly wrong. And, of course, they could just be trying to elicit a reaction from you. Avoid password sloth. Okay, so one of the problems is that a lot of people use the same passwords for all their social networking sites. This is a really bad practice. Okay, and again, this just goes down to the problems with bad password management. So just avoid that. Believing that I'm the person that's got the most connection. Okay, so if I've got more connections than you, then I will win. And be very, very careful with that trigger finger, because clicking everything, especially on Facebook sites, because you have no idea what it's taking you through to. Okay, so be very, very careful with that. Okay, so also a good thing, by the way, is to try fingerprinting yourself, by the way. So try searching for yourself, and then you can see exactly what kind of digital footprint that you want. By the way, there was one more thing I wanted to try in Google. Excuse me, I just want to have a little bit of fun. Can I have a little bit of fun? Is that okay? Oh, actually, no. Let's do this one. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, beautiful. Okay. Now, the nice thing is, try doing that, but doing a search for open web printers. That's really interesting. Okay? So, again, Twitter is good. Have a look at Pipple. That's a great website, by the way. And that is really good. So, the social engineering framework, if you're looking to how to defend, how to educate your users against social engineering attacks. Social engineering is really, really easy. Okay, and hopefully in the next few sessions, today and tomorrow, you're going to see some really interesting tricks that will open your eyes. But again, these are good websites. And what I will do is I will put all my videos up. I will put all the links up afterwards as well. So now what we're going to do, folks, is now we're going to come to a Q&A. We've got a few minutes. Do you want to come up to the microphones? What I'm particularly interested in is if you've had experience of trolling or cyberbullying or something like that and how you've dealt with that, okay? So we have somebody over here in the microphone. Maybe we could raise the house lights just a little bit so we can see these nice folks. Great. Okay, so we'll take somebody want to come up? Yes.
So I do have a question. It's not specifically on the topic you just preferred to ask, but it's a short one, so sure. Maybe you can answer it anyway.
Go for it.
So I am an avid user of Google Docs.
Yes.
And I'm just curious, you know, you brought up some interesting spreadsheets. I might have similar data in Google Docs. How do you feel about that?
Google Docs are actually doing a pretty good job. For me, if it's a free service, normally the word free, my alarm bells start ringing. Because you're not quite sure what you're going to pay for, okay? But where if you're actually paying for something, it's like Office 365, then there are guarantees in there. You know what you're going to get, basically. And they do have a code of conduct. They do have privacy laws that they must adhere to. So I think that's pretty good. But again, you can protect your data, by the way. You can encrypt your data as well, which will stop search engines picking that up. Okay. Do we have somebody else?
Question.
Yes, sir.
I've been hearing more like management sites. I'm going to say reputation.com. I mean, what is your comment on that?
Reputation.com. That's an interesting site. There's quite a few sites like that, actually. There's one in the UK that's a little bit like that. Murky water. It could be potentially murky water. Yes, I'll speak to you offline about it. I don't want to put myself in legal hot water on that one. Okay. Anything else? Yes, sir.
Hey, from your presentation, I gather you're generally in favor of laws regarding mandatory retention and lawful access to data?
Okay. My thoughts on that are mixed. So again, you've got things like SOPA, Stop Online Piracy. That's a whole different issue. That has nothing to do with, in my opinion, nothing to do with internet freedom. That just has to do with protecting IP, you know, intellectual property rights. In terms of what you're talking about there, we're living in a very different world to the one that we lived in 20 years ago. We've had 9/11, you've had 9/11, we've had 7/11, you've had Boston. So, is it a good thing to be able to search for a protect your public? How do you protect people? So the National Security Agency, for example, you've heard the key terms, the key words, yes? So we call these spook words. I thought you might like this, okay? So these are tag words that the NSA and the CIA, MI6, Mossad basically tag. So basically, if you make a telephone call, you write an email, you do a text message, somewhere in the world, these are flagged up. And you might think, hey, you know, that's okay. Let's talk nuclear. That will be picked up. Now, obviously, if you just go and say it once, then it's not going to get picked up. But if you say it over and over again, there needs to be a little bit of history in that. Actually, just while you're there, let me just show you a quick little video. So just talking about some of the technologies that these companies are actually using to actually find this information. So this is a little tool called FinSpy Mobile. And so this is how the good guys get the information from the bad guys. So this is an actual product, this is a law enforcement tool, so you can't go out and buy this. So it can be a BlackBerry, it can be a Windows phone, it can be an iPhone, it can be, and the brand is irrelevant here, by the way. But for you, it just looks like a very, very simple update. But immediately you perform that update, your phone is then infected with this malware, which then allows the police, the law enforcement, of course, to get full access. So that's the kind of things that they're doing from an anti-terrorism kind of perspective. So hopefully that helps. So yes, I do think the law needs to be adjusted in order to maintain some amount of logs. There needs to be some kind of failback device. What the UK is actually proposing is that it's taking 12 months worth of information, but it's only where it's going and who it's coming from. It doesn't actually give the content, so the content is not included. You need actually legal jurisdiction to get the actual content.
Okay. Do you foresee that causing any difficulties for opposition groups or other politically inconvenient organizations?
Ask me tomorrow in my my 21st century surveillance question. I actually answer that question tomorrow. But yes, potentially it could. Okay. Interesting, yes? Okay, a little bit of an eye-opener. So to sum up, folks, you've got to realize that social networking, the dangers of it, and if you've got kids, we really need to protect the kids, but also you need to talk to your wife as well. You know, she's texting way too much there, okay? Okay, I really appreciate it, by the way. If you've enjoyed the session, my name is Andy Malone. If you haven't, it's Marcus Murray, okay? And I will... and I'm only joking, Marcus. I love you, really. And I will see you back at 5, I believe. We're going to do another session at 5. Thank you very much. Okay.